What the?
History. 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 History.
Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly
tidbit
of tasty historical bites of interesting stuff.
It's like a buffet without all the bain-maries.
It's a snack table, okay? We're the snack table. We're the snack table at the buffet of history. I think that makes sense.
Yes, go on.
Okay. I am Trevor Holland, and I am joined by...
Susie Holland.
And, we're here to make you say, what the history?
Absolutely. And this week we have a cracker.
Indeed.
A fortnight, I should say. We have a cracker. We're doing a Halloween special edition because obviously Halloween is coming up this weekend. And it is on this weekend, isn't it? It's on Sunday.
Monday, I think.
Monday, that's right, because Melbourne Cup Day is on Tuesday. All right, I'll stop there.
It's about a week away.
It's about a week away.
So we thought that, it'd be a perfect time to do some spookier stories from history. And I will put a little disclaimer in. Susie shall be going first with something that everyone can enjoy. But I will say that mine, Susie's is more like a campfire ghost story, I suppose you could say.
Absolutely.
Whereas mine's a bit more like, I don't know, Saw. Something.
Yeah.
So,
Saw 1, 2, and 3 all mixed together. It's pretty bloody horrible. But let Trev talk more about that when the time comes.
Don't worry. I will give you another warning before everything goes super, super bad. And it's a bit hard to do it while we're recording, but I'll also put the timestamps as to what you can skip if you don't want to hear the really gory details. Or perhaps you're listening to this with a younger listener. Okay,
yes.
I can't stress this enough. It gets nasty.
Yeah, trigger warnings as well.
And there's even a couple of mentions of not very nice happenings to children as well. So, big warning, big warning, big warning. I will let you know again. When we get there, I cannot stress this enough. I don't want anyone out there to be surprised by what's coming, okay?
All right.
All good. But first, we'll get on to the nice stuff you can listen to, and then you can decide if you just want to skip mine altogether or just cut out that bit or go whole hog. The rest is up to you.
You have been warned.
Indeed.
Okay, my story is a strange story of the Fisher's Ghost of New South Wales. So it is an Aussie ghost story. So it's born and bred right here in Australia. When other kids were getting read bedtime stories and nursery rhymes, my mum, bless her cotton socks, would sing songs in my bedtime like The Seeker's Morning Town Ride, Melanie's Candles in the Rain and Fifth Dimension's Aquarius, and also Let the Sunshine In. Because my mum was a flower child and she was very, very proud of that. But my bedtime story was not Sleeping Beauty or Snow White or Rose Red or anything like that. My bedtime story was the story of Fisher's Ghost. Yeah, I know it sounds a bit freaky, but my mum's an old Campbelltown girl, and so she was very, very proud of the Campbelltown ghost. Alrighty, so it did become a bit of a ritual with me and my sister. I remember mum tucking us into bed when Vicky and I, my sister, shared a room together. Yay, that wasn't that fun, Vic. And, she would tell us both this story over and over and over again. And it became a ritual and it was really, really sweet. But, enough with all my childhood stuff there. Okay, so when Trevor and I were going to do this Halloween special, I decided, I have to do one on the Campbelltown ghost, otherwise known as Fisher's Ghost. Okay, the story begins in 1826 when 35-year-old ex-convict and now prosperous farmer and ticket of leave man Frederick Fisher mysteriously disappeared. His best friend and ex-convict and ticket of leave man as well, George Worrell, told everyone that he'd suddenly returned to England and signed everything over to him. And so suddenly, George was a bit of a prosperous man. So, but another version of the story has Fisher getting into debt. and signing everything over to Worrell anyhow. Then he gets out of jail and attempts to get his farm and goods back from Worrell. But both stories have got the same result, and on the 17th of June 1826, Frederick Fisher mysteriously disappeared. Now, this is where it gets a bit cocky for old Worrell. He was seen around Campbelltown wearing pants identified as Fisher's and told everyone that Fisher went back to England on a ship that sailed from Sydney. The Lord or Lady St. Vincent was apparently the ship that Frederick Fisher went back to England on, but checks revealed there was no such ship that left from Sydney, because the closest capital city to Campbelltown is obviously Sydney. And so suspicion turned to George, that he had something to do with Fred's disappearance. And this is a bit stupid of old George. He was bragging that his farm had suddenly gotten bigger by 30 acres, because that sounds really smart. Now, other items belonging to Fred Fisher started to turn up all over Campbelltown, and Worrell attempted to sell items actually belonging to Fisher, and there was apparently notes from Fisher to George saying, yes, these are mine, and they were actually forgeries. So the story goes on. One night, 4 months after the disappearance, a man by the name of John Farley ran into the local pub saying he saw the ghost of Frederick Fisher sitting on a bridge, pointing to the ground. But at first people didn't believe him because they thought he was just another drunkard running around. But after investigation of the area, sure enough, the body of Fred Fisher was discovered. So George Worrell was arrested, confessed to the crime, and hung at the gallows. And Fisher's body was laid to rest at St. Peter's Anglican Church in Campbelltown, where, actually, my grandfather and paternal great-grandparents are buried as well. So that's my little bit of a thing to it. Now, the place where the body was found was known as Fisher's Ghost Creek, but apparently most of it's been turned into a stormwater drain. There's another story that went on as well that said that it wasn't a ghost at all. It was all just completely made up, and it was actually also from a poem that was written in the early 1900s about it. But this is the other story, that Aboriginal trackers had found the body in marshy ground with, and I quote, "The face was completely flattened, the head fractured. Suspicion, it is said, attaches a man resident in the neighbourhood," unquote. Blood was found on the rail of the bridge above by the police, and that's when Worrell got called in, questioned, arrested and hanged. So, there's two stories there. But yeah, so the Fisher's Ghost Creek has been turned into a stormwater drain, apparently. But cashing in on this wonderful story, since 1956, the Festival of Fisher's Ghost has been a yearly staple in the Campbelltown entertainment calendar, and the festival occurs every November, or late October, early November. It's a really big thing for them. My family was actually involved really heavily with the festival until my family's mass migration to Port Macquarie in the early 1970s. So, whichever story is to be believed, I know which one I prefer. The tale my mum told me, the tale of a murdered man leading people to his body so he can be laid to rest properly. The tale of George Worrell and Frederick Fisher. Thank you.
What the history.
What the history indeed. I think it's really, it's juicy.
Yeah.
It's juicy.
Who doesn't love the story of a ghost pointing to their own grave?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, obviously the other story is probably the more practical one, but
plausible,
but hey,
but yeah, look, you know, I think that, you know, Fred, well, to me, Fred really wanted his body laid to rest properly. You know, his, you know, either way, he was murdered, whichever story you believe, and he just wanted justice, and he got it. Mm-hmm. Hell yeah, go Fred, woo!
But because this is a Halloween episode, we'll stick with the ghost.
Yeah, ghosts are more fun than the boring old facts.
Indeed.
Yeah, so I'm quite proud of that one.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Mum. You rock.
And from that charming little tale, we go on to the mansion of Delphine Lalaurie.
Creepy as something I can't say on here.
Yeah, again, it's going to start nicely. I'm going to give you a bit of a background. I will warn you when it's going to get nasty. Okay? Okay. So, New Orleans is a town well known for ghost stories and hauntings. From unsolved murders to voodoo queens, it is often claimed the ghosts of those still looking for answers, retribution or peace are seen throughout the city. Behind some of these stories lay events so gruesome it's hard to believe they come from the history books and not from some pulp magazine. One such story involves what was discovered in the mansion of Delphine Lalaurie, which is still standing at 1140 Royal Street, New Orleans. Delphine McCarty was born in New Orleans in 1780, one of five children. Her family was well regarded in Creole society. Her cousin Augustine even became mayor of New Orleans in 1815. Delphine was considered very beautiful.
Don't know who by. Sorry.
Reportedly, when she travelled to Spain with her first husband, who had been appointed as the Spanish consul general for the territory of Orleans in 1804, the queen herself was impressed by her beauty. Unfortunately, her husband died on the voyage, leaving Delphine to return to New Orleans with her daughter, who was also born during the trip. In 1808, Delphine married a prominent banker and lawyer, Jean Blanc. They had four children together prior to Jean's death in 1816. It was her third marriage where things took a very dark turn. Before I continue, records show that Delphine was responsible for the emancipation of two slaves, one in 1819 and the other in 1832. Anecdotally, she was also meant to have been very polite and civil whenever she encountered people of colour on the streets. Okay.
Now, people of colour was their quotes back then.
Yes. Deep breath time. And whew, there's a little bit more, but let's face it, this is where it's going to take the dark turn. So if you want to skip ahead, look in the description down below and find the safe time to skip to.
Mm-hmm.
Now. Okay, so everyone's left. You want to hear this bit. Okay.
Oh, God.
In 1825, Delphine married physician Leonard Louis Nicholas Lalaurie. Now, from her family inheritance and the money left to her by her two previous husbands, Delphine was much wealthier than her husband, so she had the freedom to build a three-story mansion, complete with slave quarters, in 1832. Her mansion was fairly plain from the outside, but inside it was one of the most lavish residences in New Orleans. Delphine regularly held parties, entertaining guests and dignitaries, and was considered one of the most influential women in the city. Running a house this size took a lot of work, and it is reported that the Lalaurie's had up to 54 slaves to run the household. However, they were rarely seen outside, and when they were, neighbours thought they appeared emaciated, not well cared for. There also seemed to be a high turnover of slaves, and whispers that some slaves who worked for the Lalaurie's were never seen again. A local lawyer investigated Delphine's mansion, but determined there was no sign of mistreatment of the slaves. However, not long after that, and there are a number of conflicted dates, so I am going to have to leave it vague, a neighbour witnessed Delphine chasing a 12-year-old slave girl with a lash across the roof of the mansion. The girl fell from the roof and died. The body was later discovered buried in a shallow grave beneath a tree in the yard, and a judge ordered the slaves be removed from the Lalaurie mansion. Delphine, however, quietly arranged for her slaves to be purchased by relatives, who returned them to her in a relatively short space of time. On April 10, 1834, the authorities were alerted to signs of fire at the Lalaurie mansion. When firefighters arrived on the scene, they quickly went to the source of the fire in the kitchen. There they discovered the 70-year-old cook, chained to the oven. The woman said that she had set the fire hoping to kill herself, as Delphine had threatened to punish her after a disagreement. And punishment meant going to a particular room on the third floor, from which no one ever returned. Delphine, however, was focused on efforts to save her valuables. When firefighters asked why no slaves were helping, she dismissed the questions and busied herself removing items from the mansion for safekeeping. She also refused to hand over the key to the slave quarters. The door to the slave quarters was forced open, and inside, the firefighters discovered a room. Reportedly, they fled in disgust and summoned doctors to help those inside. The room was a horror house. According to newspaper reports, the room was strewn with victims, all naked and chained to tables and the walls. Some women had their stomachs sliced open and had their entrails wrapped around them. Another woman was found with her mouth sewn shut and full of animal excrement. There were men with their fingernails removed and their genitals chopped off. One even had a stick protruding from a hole through his skull, so it was possible to stir his brain. Many of the slaves were missing limbs or had broken, badly set bones. It is even said that one woman had all her bones broken so she could be forced into a tiny cage. And she was apparently one of the ones still alive. Around the room were buckets containing limbs, heads, and internal organs. The grounds were later searched, and a number of bodies were found buried, including that of a child. The Lalaurais initially insisted they had broken no laws, since slaves were considered property and had no rights. Leonard Lalaurais was even reported to have said to a judge investigating the murder and torture, quote, "Some people had better stay at home rather than come to others' houses to dictate laws and meddle with other people's business," end quote. The surviving slaves were taken to the courthouse where the local newspaper, the New Orleans Bee, reported that some 4,000 people came to see the state of the slaves. Enraged, a mob descended on the Lalaurais mansion. However, Delphine and Leonard had fled, never to be seen again. Records in the French archives suggest Delphine died in Paris in 1849. However, in the late 1930s, Eugene Bax discovered a cracked copper plate in St. Louis Cemetery No. 1 with the inscription, excuse my French, "Madame Lalaurais, ni Madame Delphine McCarthy, décédée à Paris le 7 décembre 1842. Paris, whatever. So,
sacre bleu.
So even her death is a bit of a mystery. The Lalaurais Mansion still stands in New Orleans and is a popular destination for ghost tours, with many claiming to hear the clanking of chains and low moans of spirits still begging to be saved, and more than a few claiming to have seen twisted and deformed spirits roaming the third floor. A very, very fictionalized version of Delphine Lalaurais was played by Kathy Bates in the third season of American Horror Story in 2013. No one knows why Delphine tortured her slaves and why Leonard did nothing. But looking back, all I can say is, what the history?
Oh, God. God, that... I find it absolutely deplorable that people could actually do that to other humans, especially, and he's a physician, which, like, we were discussing this a bit earlier on, you and me, Drift.
Yep.
And we're thinking that maybe old Leonard, being a bit of a physician, liked to experiment and used people to do that with, and I find that absolutely disgusting.
However, there is no evidence of this, and also, if you're thinking, there is no mention of anything untoward happening to her first two husbands.
Yes, I'd like to know how they died.
But we've got to stick with what we've got. And if you want to know more about what we've talked about, the nice story or the nasty story.
Nice story. People still got murdered.
Well, in a much...
No, don't worry.
But links to all our sources and more information are down below in that podcast description underneath those timestamps I told you about before. So definitely feel free to keep on reading. This is what we do this for, to find and share these bizarre bits of history.
And begin conversations.
Mm-hmm.
About history, forgotten pieces of history, because there's a shitload out there.
Yes, indeed.
As you see.
And, of course, if you want more, and why wouldn't you, you can find our homepage at wthpod.rufusproject.com, part of the Rufus Project family.
Aw.
You can find the What the History podcast Facebook page very easily. You can also send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on what we talk about. If you have any other bizarre bits of history you'd like to hear more about, let us know. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah, make suggestions. I mean, we have got a list, but it's ever-growing, so, yeah, I'd like to get the listeners on board as well, and they can put in what they'd like us to research and report on.
Absolutely. That would be very, very cool. And that way we also know that people are enjoying and want to know more.
Or even listening.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Oh, gosh.
Just pop us a comment to say you're listening. We'd really appreciate that. We're only a few episodes in, so, you know, we'd like to know that we're building the audience.
Woo! For the win.
Yep, and of course, we will be back in 2 weeks' time with a couple of more bizarre bites of historical stuff. I think we need to work on our rapport a bit more.
I don't know, I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, it's raw, it's...
But this is historical stuff that will make you say, what the history?
Good night, all.
Bye.